to another episode of Ignite Your Power, the Kathy Mao podcast. Today's episode is one of every listener needs to hear. I'm joined by Michelle Campbell, founder of the nonprofit Stability and a nationally recognized advocate for financial literacy and equity. With the new big beautiful bill on the horizon, Michelle is breaking down what this legislation really means for vulnerable communities and the five simple steps anyone can take right now to become more financially literate and protect themselves and their families. We'll also talk about her powerful upcoming memoir, Bluebird, and how fasting and spirituality helped her find clarity and purpose in her mission. This conversation is all about empowerment, awareness, and taking back your financial power. So let's dive in and say hi to Michelle.
Hello, hello, hello. Hi, Kathy. Thank you so much for having me. We're going to have an amazing conversation. I can't wait.
Yes. Welcome to the show. I'm so honored to have you here. But before we dive into the big, beautiful bill, can you share a bit about your journey and what led you to become such a passionate advocate for financial literacy and equity?
Sure. So my book tells the story of the cause behind this. It's the story behind the cause of my nonprofit, hashtag Stability. But I mean, I just was almost like that lone wolf my whole life and felt out of place, didn't have a sense of belonging, no sense of acceptance, no self-worth. And it was all hidden. It was all underneath because we all wear like this facade typically on how we want the rest of the world to portray us. And I mean, after 5 evictions and 4 repossessions and 3 bankruptcies and $500,000 in debt, I was like, look, it's not, this is not cute. And it is time to be real. Everybody claims that they're keeping it real. But I wanted to have that honesty with myself first. And then once I found the courage to do that and it set me free, I just felt like I should let other people know, because I feel like that's the missing piece that we're all kind of missing. And the thing that connects us is actually what brings us together. And so realness is saying, I'm in debt, I need help. Realness is saying, I have a 500 credit score, 320 credit score, you know, That is what's real. And it just empowered me to go out there and help and be a part of it.
Wow, that's insane that you had to go through all of that to finally realize like, okay, I'm going to nip this in the bud and get going on this. So what was your belief system growing up with finances? Were you even taught about financial literacy at all? And then How did you learn after going through your bankruptcy and all of that? Like, what did you have to do to learn to get out of debt?
Sure. So I was raised by a divorced single mother. Very smart and educated. She was in school my entire life. When I was starting college, she was starting a PhD program, like, you know, worked her butt off to make sure that I didn't want for anything. And I saw her as being very responsible. And I never felt like we were poor or had gone without. But I do now know as an adult that we had struggles. But I just saw this very strong woman in front of me. But she, I mean, we were just recently talking about something as simple as when I went to school and financial aid. She didn't know about financial aid. And so she didn't know how to guide me with getting ahead of it and not being stuck with all these school loans after college. So just things like that. And we all are products of our environment, but that should never be a crutch or something just to lean on. It should let you know what you're missing so that you can go and get it from somewhere else. It could be coworkers, it could be friends, it could be social circles, networks, any of that. There's no reason to not know what you don't know. There's somebody out there that knows it. And so I'm sorry, I am blanking on the second part of the question.
Yeah. So the second part is, what did you have to learn to get out of
right.
So what got you into learning about financial literacy, and what were those things that you learned and now teach to people?
Right. And so my journey with financial literacy started when I didn't even realize it started. I started my very first business when I was 21 years old. And because I did not have the money to hire an attorney and hire an accountant and hire a bookkeeper and a tax professional, I became that, you know, jack of all trades for my business, just so that my business could thrive. And I had no idea that I was learning those skills that were later going to help me and that I was going to be able to use to then help other people. So it started there. And then when I was at my rock bottom point, it was the morning. I can remember it like it was yesterday. It was the morning of my fourth repossession. And I'm looking out the window like, okay, I knew it was coming, but this is not real. And this feels like Groundhog Day. Like I have to, like, where do we stop? And I immediately put myself on a 21-day foodless spiritual fast. And luckily, that's what I needed. Even taking just spirituality out of it, the being alone, the mindfulness is really where it was. And so I don't want anybody to take it out of context if they're not spiritual or anything. It's mainly just that being with yourself. And we all have gadgets that tell us to take a moment. I mean, I have a water bottle and a Fitbit that tell me like once an hour, like, you know, did you take your 5 minutes just to think, just to be with yourself? And so over those 21 days, I couldn't go anywhere. I didn't have a car. So that's exactly what I did, is I was just with myself. I wanted to know how this started, when this started, and I started making a timeline, and then I started attaching emotions to the timeline. And once I did that, I was able to figure out what my relationship with money was, still is actually, is, because I still have to check myself. And it gave me that mental, emotional aspect to why I spend money and how I could have done things better. And no, we can't erase all of this debt, but at least I'm confronting it. I know what bills I owe. And then I just started doing the adult thing. I ordered my credit reports. I started correcting inaccuracies. I called up all the debt collectors and tried to work out payment arrangements. And strangely enough, over half of them had already written off my debt. Like they was a bad debt, so I didn't have to pay it. So that $500,000 was accumulated over 21 years, but I did not pay $500,000. I paid a little bit more than $100,000. But still, I wanted to own up to this is what it is. You know, this is school loans. This is cars that weren't paid for. This is evictions that they still want you to pay the rent after they kick you out. This is credit cards that weren't paid for. So that's kind of how it all came together for me.
Wow. So that mindset shift, though, right? Mm-hmm. Your relationship to money. So before, what do you feel like your mindset was like when you were in debt and you were in that state versus after getting that clarity and doing that cleanse, 21-day fasting cleanse? Like, mm-hmm. how did that mindset shift change for you?
So I love asking the question, who are you? Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like, what do you do for a living, or who do you want the rest of the world to think that you are, or who are you trying to be out in this world? I want to know who you are. Who is the person that no one would ever know? And I really believe that we all have had some kind of significant event happen in our life that was so traumatic. A lot of us kind of maybe just brushed it under the rug, and we really don't even connect it to that's who we are. But that's the person that you're always fighting for. That's the person that gets angry. That's the person that gets sad and that gets depressed. And so when I answer that question, I am the 4-year-old little girl on the first day of preschool that couldn't make a friend. And all of my bad spending and my habits and actions, emotions, everything was connected to that 4-year-old little girl, because she had no sense of acceptance, no sense of belonging, no self-worth, bad self-esteem. And so that's what energized all of my spending. I was spending money to fit in. I was spending money to be a part, to be accepted, to be belonged, or to feel belonged, to hopefully raise my self-esteem, although it never did. And I still check myself on it, like in gift giving. You know, it's almost Christmas time and I'm making lists. Everybody's making lists. And I'm thinking, you know, do you want to get this person a gift because you actually care about them? Or do you want to get them a gift because you're trying to be their friend? Why do you want to be their, you know, like I constantly have to still check myself, because that is what emotionally my spending is connected to. It's different for everybody. And even when we're not even talking about finances, that emotional relationship is still true in why do you eat what you eat? Or why don't you eat what you eat? Why are your relationships bad? Or why have you had the same problems in relationships? It relates to everything. And it all circles back to who that internal person is that nobody else would know.
Wow, that is so deep and so amazing, because that's called awareness. Like you got aware, you gained the awareness of where that emotional baggage came from, why you're doing those actions. And when you figure it out and you can pinpoint it, you're like, holy smokes, right? And you just like the clarity of like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to fill a void that I experienced once before.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I mean, once I had that figured out, and I know that, you know, spiritually and, you know, with the earth evolving, that's why I was brought to my knees. I needed to get that because it wasn't about, I mean, at the time I had like three jobs. It wasn't about working more or earning more. If you don't have that mindset right, you're going to misspend the money that you got the second job for, or the side gig for. It's all connected to that mindset.
Yeah. So let's dive a little bit deeper into your cleanse. Like, this is so fascinating to me. And when you first talked about it, I was like, oh my God, I've been seeing things about like literally fasting or, you know, doing this 21-day challenge. So how did you even come across it? And then how did you have the willpower to do it for 21 days? Like, oh my gosh.
So the willpower, it's funny because before I actually completed my very first 21-day fast, I mean, that 21-day fast, the one that I completed, I mean, I was to my knees. I had to complete it. But before that, I had tried to fast for several months and I couldn't even get 24 hours. I'm like counting down like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you know, to the end, like so that I can eat. But again, it's back to the mindset. My mind was not ready to fast. My mind was not ready to surrender. And so how I got the idea was because, I mean, I was trying to do everything possible to survive. I mean, it was hard. It was not fun. And that it was hidden from people close to me and the world. I mean, so I was going through this alone. So, you know, I was doing what you're supposed to do. You know, you're supposed to pray. You're supposed to forgive your enemies. You're supposed to love everybody like they're your brother and sister. You're supposed to give back, you know, not necessarily with money, but also with time. You're supposed to stay productive and try to be responsible. And so I had three jobs. I'm doing all of that. And the numbers just were not numbering for me. I was still in debt, still broke, about to get evicted again, facing that repossession. And so I had asked a friend or told a friend that I was interested in reading this book on spiritual fasting because I was just curious on the topic. And that was the only thing that I hadn't tried. And at the time, I thought that it was just for, you know, like the elite in the church, which is not true. Like the fasting has nothing to do with, you don't have to connect it through spirituality. You can just fast just to cleanse your mind. It's mainly just a cleansing of your mind. But so I asked for this book. And my friend purchased the book for me, but I still hadn't made time to read it. Well, once my car was repossessed, I had more than enough time to read it. And I read it in one sitting, which I've never done because I was just desperate. You know, I'm like, I mean, something has got to change. This is the only thing I haven't tried. So I read the book probably in like 2-3 hours time. And I had just gone grocery shopping, had a refrigerator full of food, quickly went and froze everything. Right. So that I wouldn't be tempted. And I was like, I'm gonna do this fast. I felt like it was like do or die. Like if I don't do this right now, things are gonna get worse. And I couldn't even imagine what worse was. So and I still continue to fast. I fast several times of the year. I actually just came off of a fast yesterday. And like I always do one in January because I feel like it's a new year. You need to cleanse your mind going into the new year, set intentions, so on and so forth. But so the first 3 days are always the hardest because you just finished eating and now you're like just no food, flatline. And there are different types of fast. I mean, you don't have to do foodless. You can, you know, wait until a certain time of day. You can omit certain foods. I choose to just go 100% foodless. And so my only nutrients are water and juice and broth and sometimes smoothies. Like if it's a busy time of year for me and I'm going to be moving around because you do need some kind of nutrients. But those first 3 days, just they kill. But then after that, if you remember why you're fasting, you always need to name it. And so I want direction and guidance regarding this. And then I just journal and kind of daydream, but kind of be in my mind to try to connect the pieces. And then just something comes to me. It is the most awakening experience that I've ever had. And that's why I continue to fast. Whenever I feel like I'm confused, and that's what October was for me. October just didn't feel right. Like, I almost felt like I shouldn't be on earth. It was weird. Not bad, but just weird. Like, you know, just out of place. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm not tired and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and what's going on, you know? That told me, my body was telling me, it's because you need to cleanse your mind and fast.
That's so powerful. I've been hearing about doing a fasting because it gets rid of sicknesses as well, right? Because when you eat certain types of foods as well, your body has time to do what it needs to do as well. So there's just a lot of benefits, not only for your mind, it'll help with your body as well. So that's so incredible. But it's so cool that when you do the fast, it does do something to you spiritually. Like, it opens this awareness. And that's so incredible, like how it correlates with that.
Yeah, I mean, some people, I mean, there are so many different kinds of people, but no matter what it is you focus on, some people focus on manifesting. Some people are very spiritual. Some people, you know, but it doesn't matter. That part doesn't matter. It's more of just connecting the mind and settling yourself with what's going on and asking those questions. Like, they'll come to you there because you're still. It's more about the stillness more than anything. It's not about the food. It's not about spirituality over universe, over manifesting. It's not about that. It's more about just being still. We're not still with ourselves. You know, even sometimes when we do sit still, we're still scrolling on a phone.
True. So in the 21-day fast though, I know you do it more than 21 days. I think one time you said you wanted to do it for like more than a whole month.
Yeah, no, that's my goal. I had a fast in August and I did not want to end it. And I was just laughing at myself because I was like, I remember when it's still hard every time. Don't get me wrong, but I remember when I couldn't wait till the 21st day. And I was like, you know, now I'm done. I got what I needed. I'm enlightened. I'm awakened. And okay, moving on another couple months. But the one in August was so powerful for whatever reason that I didn't want to end it. And I almost made that goal of, I would like to do like a 30 day and I would like to do like a 40 day. And then I had wanted to once at the beginning of the month. So like every month, like just do like 3 days or a 24 hour or something like that, like just to totally be still, especially like if it's a 24 hour one, that means, you know, no phone, no TV, no talking to nobody, no food for just 24 hours. I mean, that's easy to just be with yourself, be in your thoughts, journal, think, ask the questions and put puzzle pieces together of your life. I mean, that's what it takes.
Yeah, that's incredible that you have the willpower to do that. I'm like thinking most of us are so used to a very busy, loud, fast-paced lifestyle. So just like doing the complete opposite would be, you know, kind of like,
It definitely is in the beginning until like you just get used to it. And now, like, you know, fortunately, I haven't experienced another repossession since then. I mean, that was years and years ago. But, you know, now I have to fast and be a part of the world. I have to go to work. I have to be around people. And it's still finding that stillness in your mind, even with everything else in motion and having to socialize. It's not easy. It's a constant reminder. But when you set your intentions on why you're fasting, that's where it becomes, where you can overcome the challenges. I'll say it like that. Because you're keeping that in mind. It's almost like if you wanted to buy a house and you needed so much money for a down payment. And so you got very, very strict with your finances. And so, you know, the extra Starbucks and whatever else you were nickel and diamond money over, it's not even attractive to you anymore because you want that house so bad. And so for me, it was wanting answers that no one else could answer for me. You know, they were going to come from within. They were going to come from me, but I needed to be still. So that's kind of how I go into every fast, and I'm able to navigate the world around me while doing it.
Wow, that's incredible to actually do something like that and still implement a daily routine within all of that. That's incredible. But again, that's the mindset that you created for yourself. And this is what I'm saying. Anything is possible with the right mindset. Like if you think about the most successful people in the world, they have a mindset that is different than most people, right? Like they have a vision, they have that goal, it's set in stone, and they're like, I'm gonna get to that goal no matter what. And they see the value, they see that vision. It's just for yourself too. Like with the fasting, you see the vision, you see the, like the benefits, and then you have that mindset created for yourself. When you carry that mindset, you're able to, get out of all these hard situations. So through the fast, you're able to get the answers that you needed to get out of debt and to have this incredible life that you're living now, which is so incredible. Now you're inspiring other people to, learn about financial literacy. And then you wrote a book. So let's talk about your book. That's incredible. Like, what inspired you to write that, first of all?
So it was the moment in my fast where I was able to put together the what with the why. So we're so much focused on, and actually not the what with the why, the what with the why, but the purpose behind it was actually what motivated me to write, because I'm like, I've read a lot of memoirs. I've read, over 100 memoirs at this point. And one, I love anybody's story, anybody's story. I mean, we all have a story, whether you write it, whether you tell it, or you keep it private, but we all have a story underneath it all. And I had never read yet a story that was giving insight into the things that you wouldn't know. I read a lot of books on different medical journeys, and people are being very courageous to let you in on something very personal. And but I also wanted to know, but how much money is in your account right now if you're depressed? And what's in your refrigerator? What are you eating? Is your house a mess or is it clean? Like, what else is going on in your environment and within that is a part of this journey? So while I was in the middle of that fast and all of my questions started getting answered. Like, how did I get here? What is this supposed to mean? And I found out that actually that was the purpose. Like, I was supposed to go through all of that to get the insight from it, to get this awakening, to then use all of the experience that I picked up along the way to go and teach it and help other people. And it has made me more relatable because I honestly, if somebody was trying to help me get out of debt or get through a bankruptcy and they hadn't even experienced a bankruptcy, I'd be looking at them sideways. But I know exactly what you're going through, So it made it more real and put a face on it because, going to talk to attorneys is intimidating. Going to tax court is in or bankruptcy court is going to court, period, is intimidating. All of that's intimidating, but to talk to someone. We all feel better when we talk to someone that can relate to the experience, no matter what the experience is. And so that's what it was for me, is realizing that, wow, this is all of this had a purpose. It wasn't for naught. I wasn't just supposed to be broke and then find my way out of it and then go on with my life. That was not the purpose behind it. The purpose was to actually be able to go and share the tools and experience and have some compassion, because when you're in debt or going through anything financial, I mean, we never talk about the mental health side of it. And I was extremely depressed for years. And I mean, it was on again, off again, because there were some things that would make me happy, but it was like years and years and years of like depression that was like just pushed down. And I didn't even realize it as that. And sometimes I don't think that we realize some of the things that we do out of like depression and anxiety because we don't talk about it. I mean, we talk about everything else, but we're not talking about mental health. We don't talk about money. And those two things are connected.
And those two things are so important. Like, and that's what you talk about, and that's what you've experienced. And I love how you said that, you had to go through that to teach people, and you found your life purpose through the hardships.
Right.
It's so amazing. Doesn't it feel so good to be aligned and to know why what you've been through and why you've been through it is to lead people into learning what you've learned and your experiences, right? How does that feel to be in that other side?
Yeah, I say that at least once a week, that I feel privileged to be my age and to know what my purpose here on earth is, what I'm supposed to do. Not that, you know, knowing it later in life doesn't have any relevance. I mean, you get it when you get it. And when you get it, it's the right timing spiritually anyway. But I feel so good to know that, like, wow, all of that happened, but it's for this purpose. And I am walking that path of purpose. And I recently was just trying to decide if it was harder to talk about the past, because the book covers, you know, a past 21 years of my life. And so by the time I was writing the book, all that stuff had changed. It wasn't the same. Life had gotten very good for me. But it was still hard to write. But today, on my blog, I'm talking about present day transparency in the present things that are going on in my life. And so none of the things that I talk about in the book, of course, because once you master, like once you get the lesson in anything, and once you master it, you won't have that problem again. You'll have another problem, but you won't have that problem. And so I'm talking about, you know, really like just this year and navigating just what's felt really, really different about 2025 for me in all areas. Especially in the literary world. I'm brand new to the literary world, and everything has been really exciting, but extremely intimidating and scary at the same time. And so, you know, you're like shifting your emotion just in that, like where, wow, this is a great opportunity. I'm really excited, but I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah, but you're taking that chance. You're allowing yourself to grow and to just experience, and you see the bigger picture in the end. You're like, this is my purpose, and I'm meant to write this book, let other people know about what you want to teach about financial literacy and how that truly changed your life. And now you're ready to help people change that life too. So exactly. Yeah. Finding your life purpose is, I think, one of the best things that you can ever do or feel in this lifetime, because I feel like we're all lost souls, like walking around thinking we're trying to find something, right? Like, and then we're trying to compare ourselves and be like one another, and we're trying to find commonality, or feel like we're trying to find something, that missing piece. And then It's because we're so lost from our soul purpose. And then when you find it, you're like, oh my gosh, this is why I got the life lesson. Oh, no wonder. It just led me into where I'm supposed to be. And then you're like, oh, I'm so thankful for that hardship.
Right.
Mine's not through financial literacy, but mine was through infertility.
Mm-hmm.
My listeners know my story, but that gave me more of like a spiritual awakening too, and to learn about self-love and to put myself first. And then it led me closer into me doing this podcast and then helping other people find their purpose in life. So everything, yeah, life is so much funner this way too, I feel, when you find out your life purpose and have that mindset.
Yeah, I just didn't want, my takeaway is that I don't want anybody to feel alone, because when I was going through all of those things, I felt so alone. And, you know, whether it's finances, whether it's medical related, like in your case, whether it's relationships, whether it's, you know, health or weight or whatever it is, we don't talk about these things amongst each other. And so you feel alone. And so I didn't want anybody to feel alone. And I do feel like I made all the mistakes for everybody. So like, listen to me so that you don't have to make these same mistakes. Like, I made them for you. And trust me, you don't want to do that. And then what I also realized was, until you get the lesson and connect it to the purpose behind whatever it is, it will keep cycling around. You'll keep going through it. So that's always what I talk about too, is what seems to always be reoccurring in your life, because that is connected directly to your purpose, but on the other side, once you get the lesson in it. So, you know, there's people that are, you know, up and down in weight on yo-yo diets. Okay. But what is this weight connected to? What is the emotion behind why you're eating or why you're not eating or why you eat certain things? Like there's something there, something happened in life, something, I don't know, but it's something there. And once you get that, I swear there's going to be a light bulb that goes off and it's like, oh man, I got it. And that's how my very first fast was. I mean, I remember calling my mom and speaking so fast and probably not even making sense because I could not explain. I couldn't even put into words what I was experiencing, like all just this info that was being downloaded into me about, I was like, oh my gosh, now I know why I'm in debt. You know, like typically you would think, oh, because you irresponsibly charged up credit cards and then never paid them. Yes. But there was another side to it because there was a side to why I was spending and how I was spending that I never even thought about.
Yeah, that's so good. And I love how you got that awareness and talk about what the underlying root issue is. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why you're overspending. So what tips and tools do you have for people going through, you know, financial debt or anything like that? Like, what's some important financial literacy things that we should know or even be aware of?
So when I talk about financial literacy, I like to divide it into two sides. And so there's the personal side and there's the technical side. And the technical side is what we typically think of when someone says financial literacy. We're thinking about retirement and savings and investing and stocks and interest and all. I'm not even talking about that part first, because the personal side is much more important. Then you can worry about all the jargon and what you're going to do. But that personal side, number one, the first step is just being honest. You have to have that moment of honesty where enough is enough and I want to fix my situation. You have to face it. So if you don't know how much interest you're paying on your credit card and you don't know what your credit score is and you don't know how long you to pay on your mortgage, like when it's going to be over, when you're going to have your house paid off. If you don't know those things, that's where you start. So it's that moment of honesty and then ordering your credit report. And then no one likes to be worried, but you got to have a budget. Whether you have $10,000 or $10 million, you have to know what's coming in and what's going out. Because otherwise, whether it's debt or you're saving for a big purchase, you don't know how much you can contribute to either of those funds until you know what your bottom lines are. Mm-hmm. So you've got to start there. And then I ask people to try to find your relationship with money. If we're talking about financial literacy, why is it that you spend money? I had a very interesting experience on a podcast a few weeks ago. And the host actually figured out their relationship with money on the podcast. And we were both blown away. And I was like, see, and he's like, oh my gosh, like I never would have. And I'm like, you know, it's everybody, you know, it's true for everybody. So why do you spend money? For me, like I said, it was to almost capture or gain that sense of belonging and sense of acceptance and raise my mood and my self-esteem. And so I spent money on things that would do that, whether I had it or not, because those things felt like lifelines. Mm-hmm. You know, walking around without feeling accepted or a sense of belonging and bad self-esteem, like you feel like you're dying. So for me, like I was like, I have to spend this money regardless of whatever else is going on. Where no, I would have lived. But to me, I felt like it was important. So I was like open to going into debt because I felt like it was justified.
Yeah. And you were searching for that feeling, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like a dopamine hit of like, oh my gosh, it finally hit like that void that I've been needing or seeking, you know,
right.
Kind of like being addicted to finding that thing to fill that void, which is so crazy. So people do it in different ways, like spending or eating, mm-hmm. like what you've been saying, or other things, lots of other things. So right. Awareness. Yeah, I totally notice. I love spending money on eating food. So there's a two whammy right there.
But then like if you connect it to like, okay, so why do you like food so much? Or what is it about food that you like? And then think about maybe something that happened in your life. I don't know. Maybe you have food scarcity one time in your life, or maybe you experienced some really great food one time in your life and you always wanted it to be like that. Like you never wanted to go back to just, I don't know, cereal and hot dogs, whatever you were eating, but it's connected to something if you think about it.
For sure. I know definitely it's the experience because like eating with my family at a young age, we always, food was the way that brought us together. Mm-hmm. And our whole family just loves eating food. And it's just always a good time when we're around food. So yeah. I associate food with happiness, joy, you know?
Yeah. Well, food does nurture the soul. And I mean, I spend a lot of money on food in the past. I still spend a lot of money on food today, but now I always check myself on why am I doing this? Like, am I doing this to, like, if I can't afford to go, I can't afford to go. Whereas in the past, if I couldn't afford to go, I would go anywhere.
Yeah, you check yourself now. You're like, yeah, is it necessary right now?
Right.
But having that awareness, that's good. So you teach people that, okay. I really like that foundational things because again, we're not taught this, which is why, and we should, the basics. Yeah. Looking at your bank statements, how much are you spending? How much is coming in? How much are you saving? Yeah. Well, I don't even think a lot of us do the basics.
Yeah. And that's the first part, you know, like I said, no matter how much you make, you got to find out what you have, like what the scenario is. Sometimes it's not as bad as you think. Once I wrote down all of the debts and all of the bills and all of the creditors and started calling, like I said, like over half of them were like laughing me off the phone. Like they're like, oh, we sold this years ago, ma'am. And I'm like, yeah, but I didn't have money then. I want to pay now. And they're like, well, I mean, thank you, but there's nothing for you to pay. And so I kept keeping this log because I'm like, I never not wanted to pay someone. I just couldn't because I had to pay to survive first. But I always knew that once I had it, I wanted to go back and make good on it. Mm-hmm. So, but you got to know what you have first, especially with what's coming in, not what you wish you made or in a dream life, like what you're going to make, like, no, like what you make now. And I like to do a check-in quarterly. Like I pay my bills actually on a quarterly, I budget them on a quarterly basis. So for instance, I'll take 3 months of utility bills and average those three bills to see what that average amount is. And I'll pay the average because then eventually it catches up with itself and it doesn't like throw you off different types of different times of the season where, you know, gas is higher in the winter than electric. And in the summer, electric is higher than gas. So with doing it like that, I found that that helps me. And I also do that with the whole budget. One, just because I like an average better, because then that means that you always have something left on the side. I don't like to do like to the penny number, because if you do it down to the penny, there's nothing left. Where if you average it, I don't know, you might find like an extra $100. Well, that extra $100 could either go to pay down debt or it can start your emergency fund. And then once you have debt paid down and your emergency fund, then it can go towards investing for retirement or for when you get sick. I mean, we never know when we're going to get sick. And I mean, I'm sure everybody's been watching the news. We don't know what's going on with healthcare right now. And so you kind of need a plan B on, you know, if you're going to have enough coverage or, I mean, we don't know. So you got to prepare.
But that's good. Yeah. And I guess a lot of us don't really prepare either, right? Like we're so caught up in the now and seeking what can satisfy our cravings or our emotions or whatever it may be. That's why I love your hashtag stability, which is so cool. How did you even come up with that? And why specifically hashtag stability?
So in 2017, when I was still going through it, I was at the very tail end of it, but I was still going through it. But, you know, I just had so many circumstances that did not feel fair. I had a creditor, like basically almost like, I don't know. I can't find the right word, but like yell at me telling me, oh, there's no way that you can't pay this. There's assistance out there. And I'm thinking, yeah, there is, but I'm not a veteran. I'm not retirement age. I'm not sick. I don't have any addictions. I don't have any kids. And so I don't qualify for half of the stuff that's out there. So what do you mean there's help out there? You know, so I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, you know, giving back means so much. And I really do believe that you reap what you sow. So what you put out in the world will come back to you. And even though I didn't have enough to help my situation, I had enough to help other people's situations. And so on my own, I would just find random people and just help them. I helped with several things. And then I just promised myself that one day when I was doing better, that I would just make this my cause and really be that link to help. Because while I was going through it, I couldn't find organizations to help me. And even, I mean, I'm pretty sure that there might have been like some educational resources, but I was just so at the bottom where I felt like I don't have time to be educated. Like I need help yesterday. So that's where the desire came from. And then after writing the book and, you know, going through the finding out that someone wanted to publish me and going through that whole process, I thought, now I have a platform to actually do this on a larger scale, like I said that I wanted to do. And so I am still in the middle of creating a board of directors. I keep adding people because I want so much specialty and compassion and education and experience to all of the team members that we have. So I don't want it commercialized. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, it's almost like if you went to an employer and they were like, you know, you have the heart and you have the drive and you have the desire. It doesn't matter that you don't have the degree. Like that's kind of what my mindset was. And so I'm interested in the story. Like, what have you been through? Because you're going to be talking to people that have been through something. And not only do you need to be relatable, but you need to be able to relate to them, to have enough compassion for what they're going through, no matter what it is. I mean, that mental health part is, I mean, we all leave that out. And I mean, all of a sudden, I was telling you about how, you know, almost like premonition all through like the summer on like streaming channels, all these movies and episodes have been coming to me about exactly that. And I'm like, how did this show up? You know, this is not like anything that I ever watch. And so, and it was, you know, majority of them have been talking about how someone's mental state is sometimes like not even seen, or we don't see it. And so that's actually like given me something to look at in other people. If someone's being nasty or in a bad mood or something, like what else is going on under the surface that I don't know? Because that could be a cry for help instead of them just being rude.
And so I love the compassion piece, though. You're looking at from coming, you know, out of judging or being from a negative state, mm-hmm. having your own opinions, which a lot of us do. I mean, I don't even know if we're aware. And this is something that I recently figured out about myself. I was very judgy and it was subconscious. Like I'm a very good heart. I'm a kind person. But then sometimes I notice that I already have a thought, like a judgment of how things should be or go or a certain way. And I was like, whoa, this is like not truly coming from love and compassion. So that's why when you say compassion, that's where you can really connect with them. Because mm-hmm. yes, no matter how nasty they can be, but you see it because they're probably hurt, they're fearful, they're scared, they just don't know what to do, that their body is on fight and flight. And so they're gonna snap. I mean, like, what do you, they feel like they're gonna die because they're in such a hard survival situation that they don't know what to do. So how do you feel calm when you're in that state, right? So compassion. So that's beautiful that you can bring that in.
I love that you like had the courage to like find that or notice that about yourself. Like we all need to do more of that. And that's again, with that stillness and being with yourself and being honest with yourself, you'll realize things about yourself, not necessarily bad, but like just, you know, things. We all should lead with compassion. You never know what somebody else is going through. Mm-hmm. And I mean, because we all hide it. And initially with the memoir, you know, it's titled Bluebird, but I didn't choose that title. I titled it 21 Years of Suffering in Silence because that's how it felt. That I was suffering in silence. I mean, the closest people to me didn't know the magnitude of any of the things that I was dealing with, because you just slap on a smile and go out and do what you got to do, socialize, max your credit card out to attend a party, or, you know, to go to somebody's wedding, or, you know, something that actually is significant, but not that significant, not to be going in debt over. If you were just honest with them, like, look, I can't afford it. But it's almost like, you know, we're too embarrassed to admit things like that.
Yeah, it's so true. And I love how you said that, because now you're being honest, open, and you make this topic about financial literacy and mental health less of a taboo, which is so beautiful. Like, this needs to be talked about, really.
I'm trying. I want to start a Me Too movement with credit scores. And you know how, like, you go to lunch with coworkers, you go, well, I don't know how many people would really trust coworkers, but friends, you know, your good friends, you know, people that you trust. And, you know, we're talking about everything else, but no one's like, so what's your credit score? Yeah. And I want to start, like, this, you know, this Me Too movement on, it's okay to talk about credit scores, or, you know, I have to file for bankruptcy. Me too. My car got repossessed yesterday. Me too. Like, why are we so, like, I always say that emotions that you think that you're feeling come from someone else, meaning that to talk about a repossession or a bankruptcy or a eviction, you feel shame and you feel embarrassed and all of that. But I'm thinking, no, actually you don't. Somebody else put it in your mind and told you that you should feel like that. And so you feel like that. And so you think that it's embarrassing because you feel like you're the only one going through it, and someone put it in your mind that it's a bad thing and it's negative. But there are lots of people in the same shoes that you are. They're having the same experience. You just don't know. So not only do you feel alone, then you're assigning emotions that you didn't even give yourself. You know, if you do feel embarrassed or ashamed, it's because you actually agree with it. But no, you shouldn't be embarrassed or ashamed. I mean, we all make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. And that happened to teach you something. It's more about the lesson behind the experience and not what the experience is at point value.
Yeah, but you can talk about it so openly because you've healed through it. And just like how you explained it, it made me realize how mine is through infertility. People will be like, oh my God, you got miscarriages? Like, people ask me, like, oh, are you trying for number two? And I'm like, oh no, I had a miscarriage last September. And they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And it's like, well, I talk about openly because I'm healed through it. Like, it's
right.
I'm not making it taboo.
Right.
So just like that, the more you just talk about it and make it more real or just like whatever about it, people will slowly put their walls down around that topic. So that's beautiful. Yeah. You're going to bring that movement, that hashtag Me Too movement about credit scores.
Let's try. I'm definitely going
to. Hey, that's a great idea. Whatever makes the topic less taboo and make people feel less alone, right? Like, that's incredible, because everybody does go through some financial stability, or they need help with something financial. It's not like we're talking this unless, you know, your parents are like so well off or wealthy, and then like they teach you about that, this stuff. I don't know. It just, you have to be taught this, not from the regular school system that we go through.
Right, right. Schools and organizations are getting better. I actually, right before this podcast, just read an email that the FDIC approved my organization to share their educational tools. So I will be adding those to hashtag Stability's website ASAP. But I mean, you know, it's about environment, it's about experience. And yeah, we all aren't given the tools. But I would say that even if you did grow up, I feel like if you grew up with a ton of money, that doesn't still mean that you are financially literate, because you might not have learned about money. So you could still lose it all. It would have been better to actually learn about money and not have as much, because then not only do you learn the relationship with money and how to budget money, but then how to save, how to invest, how to do those things. So then you're learning how to grow money.
I get it.
I mean, because there's a ton of stars out there that, you know, they came from a long line of money and they're filing bankruptcy. Yeah. So they didn't learn how to manage money. They had a lot, but they didn't learn how to manage it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it just shows if you're even wealthy, you need to learn this stuff. Financial literacy is so important, no matter if you have money or don't have money. It's just how do you maintain the money that you already have. And so you don't go into debt, or you don't have to get yourself in situations that don't need to, you know, happen.
So I feel like being financially literate is everybody's foundation. Mm-hmm. Everybody, no matter how much money you have, because if you don't feel like you have enough, getting another job or making more or winning the lottery is not going to help you, because you don't have the foundation down. So to get that foundation down, then that to me, that's the first step in becoming financially literate. Then you can worry about the whole technical side and the different types of investments and different risk levels in investments and what your risk tolerance is. And I mean, there are several layers there on that side, but that's why I said the technical side is like last. And that's the side that I was always looking at first.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I want to invest, and what am I going to do for retirement? I've been self-employed pretty much my whole life. Like, I don't have somebody that's going to pay me a pension or 401k when I retire. So I had to figure it out another way. And it just seemed on the surface so confusing and almost like, oh, I guess this is for the haves and have nots. And I guess I'm one of the have nots, but there are different levels to it. And actually, it's not as confusing as we may think. It's because it's written almost like in another language is the thing. And so that's another area that I'm happy that I can provide is I'm dyslexic. And so I learn differently, but because I learn differently, I understand it differently, and I can explain it probably in a way that you would understand it more than going on someone's site and trying to make sense of what it's talking about. If they're talking about APRs and interest rates and, you know, like, you're like, yeah, what?
yeah, because you have to learn. And then when you learn through your way, you can explain it better. It makes sense. That's amazing. That's awesome. So if you have any last advice or anything that you want to share with the listeners, what would you say to them if they're struggling with financial literacy or even taking the first step? Like, what's something that you think would benefit them from hearing?
So if you are struggling, you are not alone. I know that you probably heard it and you probably told yourself, yes, I am, but you are not alone. Just everybody does not have the courage to go on the World Wide Web and tell their business. So use my words of comfort, and you are not alone. It is okay. It is something that you can get through, no matter. I mean, $500,000 in debt. Come on. I mean, hopefully no one is, you know, that far in debt, but I mean, that's real. And steps to take is, you know, first having that moment of honesty with yourself, pulling your annual credit report at annualcreditreport.com. It's free. Everybody gets a free one every year for all three credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And taking out your pen and paper and making your budget on a very basic level. It doesn't have to be detailed or anything. You just need to know how much you make on an average month and what your bottom line expenses are on an average month, so that you know how much is left to do the things that you want to do.
Wow, that's incredible. Thank you for that. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge. I love the compassion that you have, and truly your passion too for the topic, and for being open, honest, and sharing your story. So if the listeners want to find more about you or your work, where can they find it?
So the easiest platform to find me on is just bymichellecampbell.com. And that's B-Y, Michelle spelled with two L's, and then Campbell spelled like the soup.com, because my book is on By Michelle Campbell. And so there's access to the book. There's access to hashtag stability. I have a financial services firm, Tax Shell, That is on the website. And then any other partnerships are coming to the website. I talk to everybody, and I work with a lot of different people that we have different projects going on. So everything all about me would be on bymichellecampbell.com.
Perfect. I will put that link in the show notes below, but thank you so much for today and spending this time sharing your knowledge with us. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for spending this time with me on Ignite Your Power with Kathy Mao podcast. If today's episode resonated with you, take a deep breath and know this, you're exactly where you're meant to be. If you're feeling called to go deeper, I'd love to support you. You can work with me one-on-one or book a numerology guidance card reading with me. All are in the show links below. And if this episode supported you in any way, please share with someone who needs it, leave a review, or take a screenshot and tag me on social media. Your support helps this message reach more souls who are ready to step into their power. Until next time, keep choosing yourself, keep trusting your journey, and keep living your bliss-soft life. I'll see you in the next episode. Bye!